Hello, hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just realizing that this is one of the last episodes where both of us are going to be like college students.
Oh my God, yeah.
Maybe we have to change our bio.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so stressful.
That's crazy.
But, you know, 4 years strong. I feel I feel like we did a thing. I'm really proud of us.
We did.
Throughout the entirety of college, like,
yeah.
What are we on? We're just crazy.
Yeah.
In a silly, goofy mood. But yeah, this story is interesting-ish, maybe. And I'm excited-ish, maybe, to tell it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, so without further ado, let's get right into it. I'm Sonia.
I'm Maddie.
And welcome to Grimm. So, this week, I'm not going to lie to you, I did pick this story because I thought his name was, like, oh, silly, goofy, you know, fun. And then the story turned out to be of, actually the UK's most prolific hitman.
Nice.
So, you know, as it is. So, his name is, John Childs. Somehow, in some places, he's also known as Bruce Childs. I don't really know what's up with that, but John Bruce Childs. I thought that was a funny name, John Childs. Kind of works, but he was, like I mentioned earlier, a British hitman and serial killer from East London. And his crimes spanned 4 years between 1974 and 1978. And then he was convicted in 1979 for this series of apparent contract killings, but none of the bodies had been found.
Wow.
Yeah. He also ended up, just a little summary, implicating these two men called Terry Pinfold and Harry McKenney in the murders. And they were convicted as well, but released in 2003 after the judge basically ruled that he was a pathological liar and, like, nothing that he said could really be trusted. Mm. And honestly, there's, like, not that much background on him. Like, usually when you do a Google search, like, you'll come up with some history. Really, the only thing I could find is that he joined the British Army as a sapper. And also, for some historical context, I learned so many things today. But a sapper is a term for a combat engineer.
Oh.
Didn't know that. It sounds like, you know, Vermont, like, maple syrup farmer or something. But it's a combat engineer. And so he worked for the army for 9 months. And then he was expelled because he was charged for burglary.
Okay.
And then that wasn't exactly his first, like, offense, I don't think. He was imprisoned earlier and released in 1972 for stealing motorbikes. So he had a past, definitely, as, like, a criminal. But that was just theft. Like, I feel like there's a very big difference between theft and murder.
Yeah.
But after he was released in 1972, that's when he started working for Terry Pinfold and Harry McKenney. And then, so they were kind of in, like, business. Like, they made devices or something, I guess. I couldn't really find, like, a definitive answer. But they definitely, like, were buying and selling things.
Okay.
I'm super descriptive. Don't worry. It's fine.
Yeah, not sketchy at
all. yeah, it's totally good. Right, and also in his personal life, he was married to a woman called Tina. And they did have two daughters together. And they were together for quite a while, but she divorced him in 1982 after he was convicted.
Okay.
So, like I said, his crime spanned a series of 4 years, 74 to 78. And in 78, I think he would have continued, like, contract killings, except he was arrested in September of 1978 for a series of bank and security van robberies in Hertfordshire, which I think was, like, something that he was doing on the side.
Okay.
But when he was arrested for this in June of 1979, so a few months later, he basically went to the detective chief superintendent, Frank Cater, and confessed. He, like, told them that he had committed this series of murders. And that's when they started really investigating it, because, like, people had gone missing, but there were no bodies, you know? So, mm-hmm. like, at that point, I think all of these were, like, missing persons cases, and they weren't really connected. But after this investigation started, the Waltham Abbey Police Station in Essex took over the investigation, and it was there that he was convicted of carrying out 6 murders of Terence Terry Eve, Robert Brown, George Brett, Terry Brett, Freddie Sherwood, and Ronald Andrews. And that was between November of 1974 and October of 1978.
Okay.
So Terry Eve was the first person who was killed in August of 74, and he was beaten to death with a piece of pipe and an axe, and then Child strangled him to death, which I think is quite brutal for a contract killing.
Yeah, it seems like you should do one or the other also. You know?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Maybe, I guess, if you wanted to throw them off, like, investigators, but I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe. But he was also, like, getting rid of the bodies, you know, like...
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't like he was leaving a trail.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, you'd think that, like... I don't know. I don't want to speculate because I don't have much experience in contract killings. But
really?
From the movie... Shocking, I know. It's crazy. But from the movies and everything, it feels like, you know, when they're, like, ordering, like, gang hits on someone, it's just, like, always a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's just an American thing. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, this was quite brutal. It was like, it was pretty aggressive. And then after this, a few months later, January of 1975, Robert Brown was shot 3 times and then axed and stabbed with a knife and a sword. So again, really brutal. Like, these were, like, not good. I mean, like, obviously no killing is good, but, like, these are, like, aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was, like, strangely aggressive. A few months later, he murdered George Brett and Terry Brett in November of 1975. They were actually father and son, and they were both shot in the head. And this is, like, a little bit ridiculous, but I feel like there's this unspoken rule that is talked about a little bit in, like, the articles that I read that were, like, you don't hurt women or children.
Mm-hmm.
But he kind of ignored that. Like, he was supposed to kill the father, I think, but the father brought the son with him, and he just shot them both.
Oh, the son was, like, young?
Yeah, I'm not sure how young, but, like, definitely, like, not an adult.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, so it was kind of crazy. Like,
it was
brutal. It was.
Yeah.
And then after that, he kind of went from the really personal, like, beating and strangling killings to gunshots. He killed Freddie Sherwood in July of 1978, shot to the head, and Ronald Andrews in October of 78, also shot to the head. And like I said, there were no remains found. There was no murder weapons uncovered. Like, he was really good at covering up his tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was that he took the body to the fireplace of his London home and burnt the body. And he also had to, like, mince up the body to dispose of it down the toilet.
Ew.
I think that was what he first tried, and then it was, like, pretty impossible, so he dismembered the bodies and then incinerated them. And I feel like the big thing when I read that was, like, how are you doing that in, like, a fireplace?
Yeah, I was gonna ask if that worked, because I thought it had to get, like, to a really high temperature.
Yeah, that's what I would think too. Like, again, like, in the movies, people are like, oh, like, you need, like, one of those industrial, like, pottery kilns or something.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, like, the crematoriums, they have, like, the massive, yeah, like, things that go up really, really high temperatures.
Yeah.
But I guess it is possible. There were detectives who reconstructed it using a couple of different things, something called an 11-stone pig, to, like, prove that it was possible to do that. And I guess it is possible. I think it must have just taken a lot of effort, I think.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, he was able to do it, and
well,
I don't think he was, like, suspected of anything, so, like, there would be no reason for, you know, detectives to come and,
yeah,
search around his flat. I think that was part of it. But yeah, they did. They basically proved it was possible. And after that, he was tried at the Central Criminal Court of England and Wales. And it's called the Old Bailey. And I am not going to lie to you, I went off on a little bit of a historical tangent here. Because I was like, oh, like, that's such a funny little name to call this thing. Why would you call a court Old Bailey? Apparently, this is actually kind of interesting, right? So apparently, the street outside this building follows the path of this ancient wall that used to be around the city of London. And in the wall, you have these, like, courtyards almost that were enclosed by this curtain wall that were known as a Mott and Bailey, or just a Bailey. And so basically they named the building after that because it was, like, in the location where this Bailey would have been. Oh. So they just called it the Old Bailey. Which I think is kind of funny. Like, humans are so clever. So he was tried there. And he was convicted on December 4th, 1979. And at that point, he was sentenced to 6 concurrent life sentences. But I don't exactly know how the laws work. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, when you have a life sentence, there is still the possibility of, like, you know, parole for good behavior and stuff like that. Like, there's still a possibility of being released early. So, like, 6 concurrent life sentences is not, you know, 100% you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And that is important later on.
Okay.
I'll talk about that in a second. Right, so at this point, when he was sentenced to these life sentences, he tried to implicate Terry Pinford and Harry McKenney in the murders. And the big thing that he said was that they were involved in the murder of Terry Eve, who was a toy maker who was murdered but went missing in November of 1974. And apparently he made his toys, they were teddy bears, in this converted church hall, which Pinford and McKenney used to make the diving equipment for their company, their business, whatever they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically was like, oh, they were the ones who committed this murder. They were involved in this murder. And the haulage contractor, George Brett, and his son, Terry Brett, who disappeared on July 4th, 1975, he also implicated them in those murders. And I think that was about, like, power, I guess, like, over the area to, you know, do their business stuff. And I actually don't know the politics behind it. But after he said that, they started this second 8-week-long trial that began at the Old Bailey in October of 1980. And this was actually after 15 months where Childs was in solitary confinement, which is a lot of time in solitary.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he must have gone, like, a little bit insane after that. Like, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
But basically at that trial, he said that Eve had been murdered so that Pinfold and McKenney could take the business. And he said that Eve was beaten and strangled and the body was dismembered and burned. And then he said that Pinfold and McKenney basically pretended to offer Brett work at the church so then he would visit the area, and that's when McKenney shot him and the son with a Sten gun. So he's, like, justifying everything that happened and kind of saying that it wasn't him, it was Pinfold and McKenney here. And he did the same thing with Ronald Andrews, who he said that Ronald Andrews was killed because McKenney was having an affair with his wife. And then the nursing home owner, Freddie Sherwood, was killed because of a £7,000 debt. And then lastly, Robert Brown was killed because he knew about the other murders.
Okay.
So he was like, well, it wasn't me who did any of this. You know, like, they had the motive. Which, to be fair, like, he doesn't really have motive for any of this.
Mm-hmm.
If, like, what he's saying is true, Pinfold and McKenney do have the motive for the murders.
Mm-hmm.
But then, that's where this is where the psychological, like, lying thing comes into play, because the defense called these two prisoners as witnesses. And apparently in this prison, when they were, you know, together in this prison, Childs had confessed to these two prisoners that he had falsely implicated McKenney because he was worried that his wife, Tina, would be accused of murder.
Well, I mean, rule one of trying to get away with it is not to just admit it to someone, especially in jail, because then they can make a deal of, you know, like a sentence sometimes.
Exactly. And of course, like, these two were called up to the stand and were like, yeah, well, he told us that he falsely implicated these other people. Like that's what happens.
Yeah. not great, dude.
Not great. But either way, Penfold and McKinney were convicted on November 28th of 1980 by the jury, even though they were cleared of involvement in Eve's murder. But when McKinney was sentenced to life imprisonment, he had to be, like, apparently restrained by guards when the sentence was delivered. I think he was just, like, a very violent person.
Dang.
And I guess that kind of, like, you know, if you see someone acting that violently, I feel like you're going to believe that they did it.
Yeah.
And then, after they were convicted, it was later reported that he, Childs, was given a whole life tariff. So he went to jail. He went back to jail for the 6 concurrent life sentences. Mm-hmm. In 1983, they kind of revoked that and put in a whole life tariff in place afterwards. Okay. Because that's when the tariff setting system was introduced. And that, the whole life order tariff thing, is basically this court order where a prisoner who's being held, sentenced to life imprisonment, is ordered to serve that sentence without any possibility of parole or conditional release.
Okay.
So that was basically saying that, like, he will be serving these 6 concurrent life sentences.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how good he was. It doesn't matter, you know, whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
He has to serve the sentences.
Okay.
He ended up writing a statement in July of 1986 where he admitted that Penfold was, quote-unquote, only convicted because of my perjured evidence. So I guess he, like, really just admitted it there.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. I don't know why. I mean, I guess, I don't know, it doesn't really make any difference to him. Like, he's stuck in prison. Like, there's nothing that he can do to get out of it.
Yeah.
So he did say that in 86. And then, multiple years later, in 1997, it was reported that he had a pen pal through the Prison Reform Trust. And he admitted to this pen pal that he dismembered the bodies of his victims and burned them in his flat.
What kind of a pen pal is this?
I don't know. I have no idea.
What they're talking about?
Yeah.
All right.
Like, if I was, I don't know if this was, like, a prison pen pal, like, in prison, or if it was, like, someone writing to people in prison, but if I was writing to someone in prison, and they sent me a letter, and they were like, yes, I did murder and dismember these bodies, and then burn them in my flat, like, I'd be taking that straight to the lawyers.
Yeah, and probably not talking to them again.
And probably not talking to them again. But yeah, he did admit that. And then he was also interviewed by the Daily Mirror, the newspaper, who reported in 1998 that he had confessed to killing all of the 6 people.
Hmm.
Penfold and McKinney ended up appealing their convictions in 1981, and that was unsuccessful. But then, obviously, like, things happened where he, you know, wrote a statement in 86 where he was like, oh, I perjured evidence. And then they were released. Penfold was released on bail in September of 2001. Mm-hmm. And then in December of 2003, both of them had their convictions overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because they ruled that Child's evidence against them was unreliable because he was a pathological liar.
Yeah.
And then, the cherry on top, yeah, is that a forensic scientist concluded that he had personality disorders that caused him to compulsively lie. And then the original jury, like, didn't really know this, so
yeah,
they convicted him without, exactly. he was a pathological liar because he had personality disorders. I don't know. And, you know, keeping that in mind, when his account of the murders changed again, I don't really think anyone believed him.
Yeah, because so many times you can change your story.
Because he basically said, like, later on, that Eve was alive, living in West London. He was not dead. And that Childs had written a letter where he said that his wife asked him to kill Eve after Eve sexually assaulted her. I have no idea where that came from. Like, there must be some pieces that I'm missing because I have no idea where that came from.
Interesting.
Like, first he was like, yes, yes, my bosses, Pinfold and McKenny, brutally murdered this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, well, I did it. I murdered him. And then he was like, well, no, he's actually alive in West London.
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah, I don't know. It was crazy. And then the last thing that I want to say about this case, which, like, I actually have no idea what to believe anymore, was that McKenny's former wife, Eileen, said in her autobiography in 2011 that Child's story about the murders was false, and that he was actually a man from Wales called Martin Jones.
Oh.
And he had taken the name John Childs from a previous tenant of his flat, and he didn't commit any murders.
Oh.
Like, his story about these murders was false.
Intriguing.
Yeah, so honestly, I couldn't tell you what actually happened.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, like, those six people are still considered missing. And that, like there are no bodies to go from, so I think there's, like, they were missing people.
Yeah.
Who this man confessed to murdering.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think based on that information alone, one could conclude that he did murder them.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, this is a sign to not judge a book by its cover and to not judge a man by his name.
Yeah.
Yep. I was really like, oh, fun little name, fun little story. There is no correlation. None at all. Fun name, not fun story.
Yeah.
But that is what I have for you this week.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have no words. I have nothing else. That was it.
That's fair.
Sometimes you tell a story and you're like, what did I just say? That's where I am right now.
Fair enough.
But do you have any final thoughts, questions, comments, concerns?
Did, like, the wife, or was it the ex-wife, have any proof that he didn't do the murders?
I don't know, actually. I feel like... I know. Maybe I will read her autobiography and let you know.
Yeah.
I'll figure that out, but...
that's intriguing to me.
Right? That's what I was saying as well. Like, it was kind of just out there. Like, 2011 as well. Like, that's years later.
Yeah.
Like, years and years. She's like, hey, by the way... What he said was false.
Huh.
I'll get back to you.
All right.
I'll let you know when I read it. After I'm done with school, you know, and I have some time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also found that kind of wild.
Yeah.
I also want to know what happened to his children.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he had two daughters. I hope they're okay. It's kind of crazy. Crazy little situation to be in.
Especially since he killed a child. Great person to be around as a child.
Yeah, I feel really bad for laughing, but that's how I'm coping right now.
No, that's fair.
I'm actively not okay.
Yeah.
I really feel like that is, like, the one rule that you follow, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, when you're involved in things where you're ordering hits on someone, like, I don't agree with it, obviously. Murder is wrong, but people must have a reason for doing these things, and that child is innocent.
Yeah.
Like, that child had nothing to do with it. But it shows what kind of a person he is, you know, if he's willing to just kill whoever. Obviously not a good person. But he's not going out of jail anytime soon. So
yeah.
At least that's the one plus.
True.
But yeah. On that note, do you have anything else that you want to add, or do you want to change the subject for us?
Yeah, I can change the subject for us. Let's see. I went to the Taylor Swift concert last weekend.
Oh, so jealous.
It's very fun. Yeah, I went on Mother's Day, and she played The Best Day, which is very nice.
Such a cute song.
It was very cute. And yeah, it was just amazing. I don't know how she does it for like 3 hours, three nights in a row.
I know, right? Like, but she's insane.
But she did it.
But she did it. And she continues to do it.
Yeah. It was really fun. And it was my first ever Taylor Swift concert. So, fuck yeah. So, yeah, that's it for me, I guess. Just, you know, recovering from that.
That's a solid update. You had a great week.
I did.
Oh yeah.
Do you have any life updates?
Well, honestly, my life updates are not as fun as yours. I've just been doing work because I have like deadlines up until May 25th. So my supervisor texted me today and was like, can you send me a draft of your slides because I have to present to the lab on Friday? Yeah, your girl doesn't have slides yet. So
no, I cannot.
I need to make those before I say that I'm going to send them to her. But you know, that's a problem for like the me in half an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's going to make those slides. But yeah, I think that's honestly really it. Like I wish I had a more exciting life. I haven't really done anything.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, do you have anything else that you want to add?
I do not.
Alrighty, do you want to spiel us out?
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram at Grim Podcast. You can follow us, like our photos, DM us, and from our profile, there's a button to email us. You can email us at thegrimpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us thoughts on stories we have covered, stories you want us to cover, or life updates of your own. We also have a Twitter, which is Podcast Grim, and a Facebook, which is Grim Podcast. And other than that, just leave us a good review and tell your friends and family about us.
Yeah, and we will see you guys next week for something spooky.
Yeah.
Until then, stay safe out there, you guys.
Bye.
Bye.